Radio.
This is the Q&A session from the panel discussion, What's the Issue with Same-Sex Marriage? Featuring James Parker, Monica Dumit, and Father Daniel McCann.
Very good question. Basically, I was asked that through the healing process, and I come to that word first of all, it's an important word. Did it come naturally that I kind of developed into being a guy? I've discovered, first of all, let's talk about the word healing. I hate the phrase, oh, people are healed of homosexuality or cured of homosexuality. Because actually that then says that homosexuality is suddenly this thing over here that you can be healed of. Well, actually, there's a lot of issues that make up somebody having a same-sex attraction. That's why the church is beginning to actually reject the word homosexual and use the word same-sex attracted or same-sex attraction. Because we can all be same-sex attracted to some extent. That's one of the first things. Also, I never went looking to be healed of homosexuality. I didn't have a problem with being gay. It's just that God clearly realized there was a man deep down in me that he wanted to set free. So when people say to me, I'm really praying that God will heal me this, I say, stop praying that. Pray that God will make you into the man or the woman that he's created you to be. That should be our prayers, that we can become the best that God's made us to be, abandoned, surrendered totally to him. What happened for me in the process is through my own prayer and spiritual direction, and with good therapy, and I mean good therapy, and it's hard to find good therapists in this area, but they do exist. What happened is, as I became reconciled with certain issues from my past, in a sense, I began to become at peace with issues that had been traumatic, and that, you know, in a sense, I was imprisoned to them. Suddenly, I was cutting myself free from them. So forgiveness was a major, major thing in all this. Forgiving myself, receiving forgiveness, and forgiving others. But as I began to go on that journey, and that became a part of my regular journey through spiritual direction, you know, of going to the church's teaching, going to the sacraments, of being surrounded by like-minded people who were focused on Jesus Christ, what happened is the true man just began to develop. I mean, I didn't sort of wake up one day and think, oh, my voice has just dropped. I didn't think that at all. It took me, you know, I mean, and my mates didn't realize it. It's people who hadn't seen me for 2 years and say, what happened to you? I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, look at you, your shoulders are back, your head's up. You used to walk around like this all the time, you know? Your voice is different. What happened to you? So it was a process that God was doing. As I was being reconciled deep within myself, listen, I've met enough people who've had sex changes. And I'm sitting there with them, they're going, oh, Caitlyn Jenner. I've not met Caitlyn, but I've met a number of people who've had the sex changes. And as much as they want to kid themselves they're the other gender, they're not. And deep down they know they're not. It's horrible watching them go through this. God doesn't make mistakes when he makes men, and he doesn't make mistakes when he makes women. Rapidly, one point, I met one man who'd had a sex change, become a woman, was a stunning woman, got married to a guy who had two kids, and for a number of years he lived as wife and mother to those children. And one day the husband says, oh, let's go in this church. This person had never been religious, went into church, and received some prayer from somebody. And the guy praying said to this woman, I've got this words, David, David, come home, come home. And what happened is the woman looks and looks at the fella, and it's like the double-edged sword of God's word cuts right through her. And she realizes God did make me a man. She then went and became a him again. So had the breasts removed, went testosterone, got a prosthetic penis, the rest of it. And I've heard this guy witness in the US a number of times just saying, when God makes a man, he makes a man. Our issue today is we listen to what society says and we try and meet people where they are and say, poor you, strokey, strokey, let's make it all well. Instead of trying and saying, what's God's agenda in this? That's where we as Christians need to step up to the mark. But we've got to walk that journey ourselves first of all. God, what are you doing in my life? How do I become a better man? How do I become a more holy woman, etc.? I'm talking too much. Next question.
Again, sorry, I think we don't get you type of speakers, you type of talks very often. So I was just wondering if you would mind telling us a bit more about how you transition from, as you said, a long-term gay relationship into, so now you're married and you have a daughter, and how did that change? So you talked about your change as a person, but how that changed in terms of your relationships, how did that happen?
As Father Dan very wisely said, is everybody's story is very unique, and we can't just take a blueprint. But there are some benchmarks or certain steps that seem that we can pay attention to. For me particularly, what it was is going from the practicing homosexual, I first of all, I had to cut off from sexual practice. And that meant haphazardly, and I mean haphazardly, definitely with God's help, choose chastity. But with his help, I was able to do that. It was only in that place of chastity that I then could go back and spend time with others who understood what was happening within me. So then I became a part of a group of guys who were also, they'd also become chaste, and they were also looking to be holy. So it says we stopped setting each other up as possible dates and started saying, no, we're going to be brothers together and walk towards the cross. And it became a place where we could talk about what was deeply happening in our own same-sex attraction. That was a safe place. From there, the next stage that I had to take up, and I often talk to guys about this as well, is there comes a point where they've got to break away from their same-sex attracted world and being, you know, oh, those straight men and us gay men or same-sex attracted men, etc. I had to learn to make strong other sex-attracted friendships, but I had to make them with guys I didn't find attractive, the ugly guys, if you like. I shouldn't say that, but that's true. But it was true, because otherwise I'd have gone, oh, and I would have felt too small compared to them, you know? So what happened is I had to then befriend other sex-attracted guys and be vulnerable with them about my own fantasy life and the stuff I'd done, because then they go, oh, yeah, mate, I accept you, mate. Yeah, you're great. They began to give me the attention, affection, affirmation I needed. I began to take my place alongside other sex-attracted men. Once I was able to do that, it was only then that I actually had to learn that I've actually got to go and face the guys who previously would have been my total drop-dead gorgeous, you know, whatever. And then I became their friends and realized, oh my gosh, they're as broken as me. The other important thing that people never talk about, they sit and think this, is that, you know, people say to me, oh, are you still same-sex attracted? Well, I think guys are really handsome. It's a healthy thing to think guys are handsome because God made guys handsome. I think women are gorgeous and beautiful. It's a healthy thing because they're beautiful. It's not one or the other. It's about the fact that actually we've lost what it is to have intimate friendships with each other and to be able to say, you're very beautiful. That's okay. I can appreciate that. Now I need to step back and keep my focus on Jesus. Thank you very much. So you asked about how I went. Basically, there's a kind of a... I mean, we're talking over a number of years here. I mean, in some ways, we can see people begin to make... I say transitions, and I want to be really careful. I never preach going from gay to straight. I just think that's really unhealthy, and it sets up a false hope for people. That's why I say to them, come to Jesus. Just come to Jesus. Listen to what his spirit is saying. Just learn to be obedient to him. But that's true for all of us, wherever we're at.
This is a question for either Father Dan or Monica about the legal or pastoral spiritual.
So I've got a question for Father Dan, which kind of relates to the comment you just made about people without same-sex attraction being equally broken. And I suppose sitting in the confessional box, you get a kind of unique insight on that. So I was wondering if you could perhaps articulate where you see the connection between these different kinds of brokenness and how that picture all comes together. Because I think people who don't live in the world of same-sex attraction don't actually think of themselves necessarily as being in that same boat.
I mean, that's a great question. The one great catch-all line, if you ever want to address anyone and know you've got absolutely everyone in the room, is to say, fellow sinners. Because that captures absolutely everybody. Now, in terms of those issues of brokenness, well, trying to live out, just since we're talking about the area of sexuality, trying to live our sexuality in a pure, authentic way is pretty much of a challenge for someone who is attracted to the opposite sex as someone who is attracted to the same sex. Pornography is an absolute blight on Western society. There is a website, a very good website out, called Fight the New Drug. And there is no drug perhaps more prevalent. I mean, pornography makes ICE look like small change. It is so prevalent, and it is as prevalent amongst testosterone-fueled teenagers as it is amongst married men and women. And don't think priests and religious are exempt from it either. It is everywhere. Okay, that's probably the single biggest issue of struggle. Okay, now the dynamic of addiction that lies there is the same whether someone is looking at straight porn or gay porn. That dynamic, that obsessive addiction, that need to have instant gratification, which ultimately ends up juvenilizing the person and making them unable of forming any kind of true, authentic, self-giving relationship. Okay, I've focused a bit on pornography, but the struggle is much broader. The first thing to realize, and this is this perspective. We all struggle. Therefore, I can never put myself in the boat, okay, so I'm attracted to women. That cannot put me in a morally superior boat to someone who is another guy who's attracted to men. We're both sinners. One might be, okay, so homosexual attraction brings its own certain dynamic, but nevertheless, you would have to take a guy who is perhaps very powerfully sexually attracted to other men, who is nevertheless fighting to try and be chased. Maybe he's falling a lot, but constantly getting back up again, as being someone who is morally far more worthy than a straight guy who makes no attempt whatsoever to stop his porn addiction, to acting out, etc. Okay? So that dynamic of sin and forgiveness is the same. Which means the good news is the same for both of us. Which means that dynamic of constant falling and getting back up again, falling and getting back up again, that mercy does not discriminate whether the guy is gay or straight. It is the same. And that father-like love that is constantly beckoning his child to come towards him, it is like the father teaching the child to walk and says, "Come to me." And the child walks a few steps and falls flat on its face. Then dad picks it up, backs away again and says, "Come to me." And the child makes another few steps and goes down again. But the child trusts that daddy is always going to be just a few steps ahead. And so it keeps coming and coming and coming. That is the dynamic with every soul before God, whether they struggle with homosexuality or whether they're attracted to plants. Because believe me, there are people out there who are. Okay? Okay?
All right, that's it. Sorry.
So it is that. It is that. The ultimate is that dynamic of mercy. We're all children before God, children who fall. But children who know they have an infinitely loving Father who will forgive them with all his heart the second they ask for it. And it is that message of mercy that is the great hope, that is the great unifier of the struggle, be that struggle, be heterosexual or homosexual.
Thanks, Val. Is there a question for Monica on the legal response or even what we do as as Christians in the world? Yeah, do you want to come forward?
Yes, to Monica. I was in Wellington in New Zealand when they passed that law to effectively have same-sex marriage in New Zealand. And sadly, when I was watching Parliament that night, as a priest, part of me died because I didn't see the response among Catholics there that is trying to make something, some sort of a difference to our parliamentarians over there. Well, you have to accept the fact that New Zealand only has 12.5% Catholics, so that's hardly half a million. And among that half a million, how many would really stand up and voice out these concerns? So what the Catholic Church was left to do was try to salvage the situation and try to make some legal safety nets in order that, as a priest, I wouldn't be charged with anything if I refuse to solemnize same-sex marriage, even if they're Catholics, or even as a parish priest, I have some safety nets that I can refuse the use of my own church or my own parish facilities for that purpose. So even though it is really quite a very sad situation that we have to salvage what was left, but still, I mean, it's still better than nothing. But here in Australia, on the legal side, if, for example, the parliament passes this bill, which I think it's really very, very horrible, but at least is there, for example, after the plebiscite, because after the plebiscite there will still be time for them to craft the bill, what are the chances to still make some safety nets in order that, for example, because I work now here in Macquarie Fields, that I won't be charged if I refuse two Catholic couples to solemnize a marriage, so on and so forth.
Thanks, Father. That's a really great question. Last week I was listening to the Human Rights Commissioner, Tim Wilson, speak, and he was saying that Catholics should start now in speaking about the safeguards and trying to negotiate the safeguards that you speak about. I think the problem there is that what he's looking for and what others are looking for is for us to concede that this will happen and stop fighting for marriage. And so I don't, at this point, although obviously we're thinking about it and, you know, people are working behind the scenes, I still very much think that as a church that we shouldn't necessarily be looking for legal safeguards now, because I don't want to give one inch of ground on this debate. I absolutely don't. But you're right, I think that after a plebiscite happens, and if it appears that the parliament is going to be passing it, that's really the time for us to get engaged and be there and be ready to be making these demands. I don't think that any type of legislation would pass without them asking us for what we're after and what safeguards we do need. And I think that we really need to be vocal about that. One of the things that a lot of the marriage redefinition advocates keep saying is that the problems that are happening over in the US with bakers and photographers and things like that will not happen here, and we're not seeing it, and nobody in Australia has ever complained that their human rights are being trampled upon. And so in addition to the churches and priests and parishes needing to look for safeguards, we're also going to need Australians with some courage, some Catholics, to stand up and go, actually, I need to be heard in this debate as well, because it will impact me. Because at the moment we're being told that those people don't exist. And so, you know, we do need to be courageous and to speak up as well. It's not, we don't just leave it to the clergy. And, you know, as wonderful job as you do, it is really a task for lay Catholics as well. And so I just might say one more thing. If this does happen and we start to get marginalised and there are restrictions on our rights and our freedoms, what might only be left is the way that we teach marriage and the way that we proclaim marriage is to live good marriages ourselves and good family life ourselves. So for those of you who aren't called to priesthood and religious life in the room, that you will be our strongest support of, you know, our strongest way to continue to proclaim marriage as our rights keep getting restricted.
I just want to make a very, very quick comment on that, because I think what Monica's saying is very important. You raise a very good topic, Father. I mean, look, I regularly talk with gay rights activists. And let me tell you, there's no such thing as two people getting married. They want anything and everything for anybody, whenever. It's not about two people. It's not about two people. You've got to understand that. I've heard this many times from people who are similar age to you. That's the first thing. If this thing was to be passed, I was going to say this. Disney are already preparing their movies about the two princes. You've got to understand that whatever happens, the prince will fall in love with the prince. It's been passed in America. Wake up! Hollywood is already preparing a way forward that we are going to be saturated with this stuff. And everybody wants us to roll over and say, it's just inevitable. We literally bastardize every generation after us if this goes forward. That's why the holy marriages and all these things that we're saying here today, this is the most important thing. that's going. I've worked across the board with euthanasia and the public affairs stuff. Nothing is as big as this, because Satan wants to destroy Genesis 1 to 3. If he can destroy man and woman as they are, he's won. There's no bridegroom coming back for his bride, which means stuff you, Jesus. I've won. We know Jesus has won, but we've got to actually step and recognize that we are warriors in this battle with him. And that demands our prayer. It demands our holiness. I talk too much. Here you are, Bernard.
I feel we've reached a really great point, and I'm sure there's a lot more questions, but I'm conscious of the time and conscious of people's need to keep moving, and also of people's cars, which are in the car park, including Father Dan. So we've got to let people move on. I'd really like to thank you for coming here, for being present, for engaging in the debate. I think we've heard some great different facets of what's going on in the same-sex marriage debate, and I really hope that it's made you think you want to get involved and get your mind around it and really get out there and engage with the people you engage with, who no one else might engage with from this perspective. So I'd like you to really put your hands together for James Parker, Father Dan McCann, and Monica Dumont. And Jesus. Thank you for joining us at Catholicism 101. We meet every Tuesday here for City Silence, and our next Catholicism 101 will be in November some point. If you haven't already connected with Catholic Youth Service on Facebook, you can do that and you'll be kept informed. God bless you, safe travels. And if you want to talk to them, maybe catch them after. Thank you.
That was the Q&A session for What's the Issue with Same-Sex Marriage? For Catholicism 101, hosted by Catholic Youth Services in the Archdiocese of Sydney. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.